Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
That's where the song was right. You just got to treat it like a lady. It's the Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrease, Quaid, IA, Craig Robinson in a cast of thousands this morning. At least that's what it's going to feel like. We don't usually talk about, well, okay, let me rephrase that. Mm-hmm. We often talk about things that aren't necessarily 100% germane to the day's proceedings, but this is kind of off tangent even for us and a little bit of low-hanging fruit. But how refreshing was it to walk out the door this morning and not feel like you walked into a wet wall?
Boy, it's been
when you opened the door.
It has been an oppressively hot and muggy, sticky, nasty
even
week.
If it only lasts for like 10 seconds, I was glad that we had that experience.
10-second respite.
Yeah, once again this morning. Coming up on the show, pulling out to make a statement and veep picks for the Democrat Party. Mm. We'll get to all that this morning on the Morning Meeting. Craig Robinson as well, and we're going to, is this the one where you decided to torture various generations with what they think of the other generations?
Yes. Ask the old folk what they think about the young folk.
All right. Well, maybe
old folk being you guys.
I was going to say, if you're extremely unlucky, Quaid and I may give you our opinion of you on this morning, on the show this morning.
Now, individually or generation?
I'm not sure.
Twenties. Thank you.
Ooh, that was a little bit of a stab right there.
I'm not really ready to be 20, so I'll be 20 as I transition to adulthood.
Are you having that experience close to home?
Well, here's the thing. I coined that phrase back when I was 19 trying to turn to 20, and I was uncomfortable with being 20. So I kind of jab
you
in
lived
fun.
It. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, we'll see if that's what we find out coming up in just a few minutes here this morning with IA as she hits the streets for the Morning Meeting. I want to grab this first, though, because we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the national picture today. There is a contentious reveal, so to speak, going on today when the show ends at the James Thompson Center, where Governor Rauner is going to sign legislation to increase transparency in school testing and honor training for teachers. This goes back to, it was an old email of Bruce Rauner's was dug up, in which he described to, they didn't say who the recipient of the email was, he described Chicago public school teachers as virtually, half of them are virtually illiterate, and 50% of principals are managerially incompetent. So that didn't sit real well with CTU.
Well, no.
You
could imagine
that. Nothing
sits well with CTU except everybody else's money.
Exactly. So he's going to be up in front of that crowd today signing this legislation to increase transparency for school testing and honor training for teachers. The president of the CTU, Karen Lewis, might be a name that you've unfortunately had to devote a brain cell to in these hard times, has said that Governor Rauner's, quote, Trump-esque affront to educators revealed his true attitudes of elitism toward who we are. She then engaged in the very dangerous if-then-therefore construction model.
Ipso facto?
Yeah. If he said that and put it in an email, just think about what he really feels about us.
And then leaves it wide open to whatever your brain conjures
at that point in time. The darkest possible nook or cranny that your brain can run into. The other quote from her, or I'm sorry, this is from Dan Montgomery, the Illinois Federation of Teachers president. That's one of the teachers' unions. Quote, while Governor Rauner publicly claims to love Illinois teachers, his private emails reveal an appalling truth. He holds them in contempt. No public service servant, let alone a governor, is fit to oversee the education of our children when he or she has so little regard for those who teach.
I think there's two different things, though. I think that Governor Rauner does respect teachers and the hard work that goes on in classrooms. What he doesn't, I want to say respect, what he has issues with is their union.
I would be a little harsher than that. I would say that we've had too much regard for those who teach. We've coddled them for too long. We've given into union demands that are unmanageable at this point. You have the pension spiral problem. We've continued to roll over. We know in the private sector that competition is where it's at. It spurs innovation, reduces costs, brings better products to the market, weeds out inferior products. And yet we won't put our education system into the competition-free market. We've coddled them for too long.
We won't
do vouchers for education. We won't compete with charter schools. Everything is set up to protect the antiquated legacy of teachers and teachers' unions.
And that's where it comes back to, where what you're talking about, what you're railing against right now, isn't necessarily the teachers. It's that structure that benefits the mm-hmm. union before the students.
The question is, how much responsibility do individual teachers on the local level bear for that ongoing paradigm? They could get together and go, you know what? We see the failure in education. We need to open this up. If we're really all about the children, oh my God, we're going to need more money. It's all about the children. Well, you know what? Make a decision about the children and not selfishly about yourself, and get them the best education, even if that means you're out of a job, or you have to work a little harder, or you have to, God forbid, compete in America.
But you're right. At that point in time, the teachers, and there are teachers who understand and get the bigger picture. But at that point in time, you're asking them to say, okay, it's easy to stand here and say, okay, I understand that the union sometimes doesn't do what's necessarily right for the you know, voting public, but it does what's right for me. It looks out for me. I've had this conversation. You know, the union's treated me good. That's a direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
And can you get past it? Can you see past that relationship to do what's right on a larger scale? And can you coalesce? Can you gather your coworkers? Can you gather your compatriots around that larger idea? That's a pretty big mountain to scale. And in a short time, I will also throw this out. When Karen Lewis says stuff like that, you know, the governor sees us this way, you have to understand she's also including in that the people who put the governor in place. She's talking about us, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So don't think that statement. Now, she'll say, oh, no, I'm only talking about the governor. No, you're not.
She's talking about an attitude that wants accountability and reform in a broken system.
I think that's something that we should welcome.
Yes. No accountability, no reform, just more of your dollars forcibly extracted and redistributed to a broken education
system.
What's
worked about that so far? Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you pleased with with the fruit that has bore? No? Then let's try a different approach.
That's what the governor is facing this morning as he looks to sign that legislation, coming up in just about 45 minutes. All right, as we continue this morning, Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, on the way. Quaid, you mentioned Craig was just spitting fire on Twitter last night.
He was, and I know I've used this word about him before, but when there are nights when he's jazzed about something, he is prolific on social media, and last night was one of those nights.
And we'll also talk it over with IA as she gets a chance for the generations to go, oh, I guess it wouldn't be mano a mano, but to reveal their thoughts about each other. We'll get that as we continue this morning, next here on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Zekreese, Quaid, IA, producer Josh, awaiting the arrival of... Is he arriving in the vamper today, Craig Robinson?
He should always arrive
He's in the metaphorical vamper every time he's on the show here with us this
morning. That's the image I always have in my head.
Absolutely. If there was ever... They say that the dogs and owners tend to look similarly or share aspects. With Craig, I think it's his preferred vehicle, which is even doubly funny because it's not technically his.
Yeah.
Tells you something about Craig.
It's a I don't even say dually owned.
It's a community.
Socialism! He has access to
it. It's socialism. We're going to have to call him out.
Not really.
That.
I don't think the neighborhood can use the vamp. If they ask, they probably
for those
could.
Who are in, you know, on it.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's on Dan. Wait a minute. Didn't they sell the vamper? Wasn't the vamper for sale?
You're ruining the mental image. They did. He has remarked, though, that he wants to embark on Vamper 2.0 project.
Oh, I'm ready for that.
Absolutely. I think this one will make the jump to Lightspeed. So we'll see if that's going to be a reality or not. Next week, Philadelphia Democratic Convention. Hillary Clinton, the presumed Democratic nominee, is set to make her choice for VP today. It looks like Virginia Senator Tim Kaine is the front runner and is likely the odds-on favorite, if you were the bookie's favorite, to be announced today. The other two, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack
from Iowa,
of course, and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker was a late entry, apparently, into consideration. But reports coming out now that the odds-on favorite is Virginia Senator Tim Kaine to be announced as Hillary's running mate later today before going into the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia beginning at the beginning of the week.
It'll be interesting to see. Is she going to make that? You said that she's going to make that announcement later today?
According to those in her campaign, they want to make that announcement apparently prior to the weekend to give people a chance to settle in on it and then
head into
the convention. So for timing, you understand it.
Sure. You've got the Trump acceptance speech last night. That's what people are talking about this morning. To make the announcement, lunchtime-ish, now you're dragging... the narrative, the topic, you're using the news cycle to your advantage. Yeah, I totally get that.
I think that's 40% of being a candidate in this era is understanding how to use the news cycle to your advantage.
You need to understand how it works.
Yeah, we certainly saw Trump do that during his run-up to the nomination and acceptance at the RNC convention last night. More on that coming up this morning with Craig Robinson in just about 14 minutes here on the morning meeting. It is an every other week Friday, and that means that our intern for the summer, IA, intern Addie, has put together an intern on the street package this week, and she tackled a tough topic this week, and that is intergenerational assumptions. Not relations, because this isn't about relationships and getting to understand each other. It's rather about assumptions and what those generations presume is true about the other. Producer Josh, let's roll this out, and we'll talk to the author of this piece coming up next on the morning meeting.
The millennial generation has officially claimed its spot as the nation's largest living generation, moving baby boomers to second place. I'm Addie Ippinson from the morning meeting, and this week I spoke to members of both Generation X and baby boomers to hear their thoughts on millennials.
What do you think about my generation, the millennials?
You scare me.
And why do I scare you?
Because you're... Values or lack of scare me. Work ethic scares me. The expectations that you think that you deserve something just because you're here, that scares me.
I love their passion, and they are an interesting group to try to lead because they don't accept what used to be you had to do it because I said it. That didn't work anymore. They want to know why and reasons, which is awesome. It's a great thing.
There's a lot of maturity that needs to still occur. You get that by dedicating and doing hard work and seeing it through.
What are your thoughts about kids my age?
I don't think that they like to keep a job.
You're the third person I've talked to a lot about starting from the bottom and working your way up. Do you think that's a big change from your generation to my generation, that there's a kind of a lack of work ethic maybe?
Yes, I do.
What do you think is the biggest difference between your generation compared to mine?
I think we had to work a lot harder.
Yes.
I definitely think we had to work a lot harder than what you guys are going to have to and what you have had to. It's just a different. It's a different time. You're more used to. This is the way it is. You get what you want, and it doesn't work that way all the time.
Technology, Facebook, Snapchat. I think the social side of it is a lot different. I think that generation is a lot more connected with each other than mine.
Patience. In our generation, I think you expected, like if you went into a job, you expected to start at the bottom and slowly climb your way up.
What would you say to someone my age who is maybe a little impatient?
Well, I think if you start when you're young and you stay at your job and just work up as you go through school and just keep working up, but they think that they can just, they come in and they work for a while and they don't like it, so they go someplace else. You gotta have a steadiness until you get a little older.
What do you think my generation has to offer that maybe we haven't seen before in previous generations?
I love the open-mindedness. I love the idea that, you know, again, past generations, if you've been here longer, you just get to be in charge. And that's not the way it is anymore. Now it is. If you have the best idea, we'll follow you.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing.
I don't know if I always feel like I agree with my generation, but I feel like it's definitely a different mindset. What do you think that different mindset has to offer the future?
From the future perspective, it's always seeing a don't taking the status quo. You don't accept the status quo. Why are we doing it this way? You always ask those questions. But my piece of advice would be you need to learn why we do it that way before you make the recommendation, let's do it a different way.
What kind of advice would you have for someone my age, the millennial generation, as we get into the workforce, as we begin to kind of start the next phase in our life?
Some things never change. Good work ethic, people skills. I think some people in your generation, maybe the technologies has disintegrated some of the people skills, the communication skills. I think anywhere you go to seek employment, if you walk in by yourself, stand up, present yourself well, it's huge.
I would tell you, think about what you're doing and going to school, or you're going to end up with a huge debt. And try to save a little bit all the time, even if it's like $5 or $10 a week.
One piece of advice for someone my age.
Pursue your passion. I've found nothing, if you're not passionate about it, everything sucks. It doesn't matter what obstacles are there, you're going to get through it.
I'm a firm believer that every generation has their pros and cons, and maybe millennials have more cons than pros, but nevertheless, there's still some hope. So speaking as a millennial, have faith in us elders. We're not all that bad.
That's the latest from intern Addie here this morning on the morning meeting. How much fun was it to go out and get that? And did you ever feel like it became personal since you were the embodiment of your generation there asking the question?
It was really fun. Before this, I had only talked to millennials, and then this segment was obviously a lot different. But it was cool to hear their perspectives. And as I talked, I learned more about the person in general. I was talking to, you know, substitute teachers, a retired Army officer, a coach, a principal, a small business owner. So they've had that personal experience with millennials, and I think that was even interesting. It's not just some angry old person who sits on their couch all day. You know, they have these actual interactions with them, and that's how they form their opinions.
You mentioned sitting down and actually getting to know these people. How much of this was, did you feel like was diplomacy on their part versus just being openly honest with you? Or did you sit with people long enough to get past that, I'm going to say what I think I should say and get to what I actually feel?
No, I was concerned going into it if people were going to be hesitant to be honest, but people were completely 100% honest. I don't think there was any holding back, which I appreciated.
Did you learn anything that you hadn't before about the attitudes of our generation toward yours? Because I think often it's misrepresented as just anger, when it's not. It's a combination of things, and I don't think anger really has anything to do with it.
Yeah, I think before this, I thought it was usually mostly anger, but I guess more so just not disappointment. That doesn't make sense either, but just kind of...
No, there's still time to make something out of you.
Yeah, there's still some hope, I guess, but I don't know. Just kind of the, they wish we could do more, like they want us to do bigger and better things, which that can be seen as a positive as well.
Well, and one of the things that your generation is becoming known for is because it's really the first generation that's been integrated with user-friendly technology from the jump, your learning curve is real parabolic as opposed to step increments like I think Quaidenbein's was. Mm-hmm. And I think because we see that quick growth that we expect it to continue, you can't continue growth at that parabolic level forever. But it'll be interesting to see where I think the generation goes, Quaid.
What I heard was the older generations, meaning my generation, the generation before me, expecting your generation to follow the footsteps that we have followed, those incremental steps like Sean just laid out, whereas what I think you expect from yourselves are to leap. Whereas maybe you don't want to be start if you begin at a low level, if that works for you, that's fine. But if you want to leap to the front, I think there's entrepreneurial opportunities for your generation, because I think you've seen that from and the tech world has provided that. And I think that's what you see is I don't have to accept this long path where I do 40 years someplace in one business, one profession, one company, and end up, you know, somewhere at the end for that long game plan. I can actually, you know, kind of shoot for the moon if I want to. I think your generation believes in that much more than our generation. We were kind of hammered into the this is the way you do it. I'm trying to bring it all together.
Yeah, definitely kind of that dreamer generation that I can be up here, mm-hmm. and maybe if I can skip all these other steps, great. But there also needs to be some reality that you might not get there,
sure.
and you need to accept that you have to take those steps just like other people have.
It's not a certainty, and it's good to understand. I think I heard one of the comments say you need to understand what we've gone through and why we do the things we do.
I thought that was a very insightful comment, is to understand the system before you attempt to change it,
mm-hmm.
right.
you know, rather than just presume you understand it. I think this leads back to a fundamental question about this election coming up before us on the presidential level, which is in order to continue to experience that quick growth and opportunities, you need an economy that's actually moving,
mm-hmm.
and not the one we've been stuck in.
That's what I was expecting more people to talk about is, you know, I'm worried for you guys to take on this economy and, you know, try to solve all these problems that we've created, but not many people touched on that, and I was expecting to hear more about...
You're not going to hear from that from these two current generations because boomers have their head in the sand. They don't want to be responsible for their role in the tragedy, and our generation is still a little too selfish. So we're not necessarily thinking about you guys yet.
I don't know that... I wouldn't say Gen Xers. Gen Xers grew up watching boomers be incredibly selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell you that we kind of veered away from that.
Well, selfishness isn't always wrong. We're still very much at our age raising families, involved in the prime earning years of our lives, even though we've foregone that to do this show. So, I mean, you have to have kind of some selfishness to take care of yourself. And that's what I meant by that selfishness, where you have to make sure your house is in order before you can lend help to your neighbor, sort of thing. So many of us are still making sure that we have that firm footing, whether it's financially or whatever, going forward.
Yes, I don't necessarily think of that as being selfish on its face. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I don't think of that as generationally selfish to make sure that you're, you know, fiscally sound or you know, on firm ground before you go out and try and do something. I don't think that's a selfish perspective at all. I think that we as Gen X were
personal responsibility.
Force-fed.
Yeah. I was going to say.
We were force-fed the boomer perspective and lifestyle. We were told that we had to do it the way they did, which was terribly ironic considering they rebelled against that entire perspective from
on
their
every
life.
Level.
And you have that generational perspective, and I heard some of that in the attitudes, and I think that's just something that happens. The generation watching the next generation, and you guys will go through it too. When younger kids start coming up behind, you don't know what you're doing. It's gonna happen. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in how that generation behind you deals with it.
This is gonna be my last show with IA and one of her packages, because she'll soon be going back to school, leaving us after this summer internship. And she will have another one in a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. but I'll be away. So my advice to you would be to be fearful for what Quaid has planned for you that week.
Oh, okay. I look forward to it.
No, we've talked about it. She's not afraid.
No, I don't mean for the package. I mean just for the whole week while I'm away.
I might ask you to do more.
Coming up. It's been great, and I've looked forward to those every week. IA, thank you very much for your contribution. All right, coming up this morning, Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, maybe next on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
So much to get to this morning with Craig Robinson here on The Morning Meeting. And there's no better way to break down what is being hailed as a possibly game-changing speech last night than to bring in Craig Robinson, direct from Global Marketing and Direct Mail, to help us break this down this morning here on The Morning Meeting. Craig, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it seems like you've abandoned the Iowa Republican, so we decided to go with kind of what you're actually doing now.
There you go. That's fine. I appreciate the love.
Well, we figured we'd find out just how good our relationship was by teasing you about that a bit this morning on The Morning Meeting. But one thing that definitely wasn't a tease was Donald Trump's speech last night at the Republican convention. You were on fire on Twitter over there, so much so that Quaid was even texting me going, my God, he might be using up all the data he has this month during this speech. And first of all, let's get out of the way the things that Trump isn't. Trump isn't a great natural orator. Trump isn't someone who really sort of commands the room the way some of the other speakers that we saw there can do it. But that being said, I don't necessarily need a leader to just be a great orator. I think one of the problems we have in this country is we elect great orators and not necessarily people who are good at leading or legislating or kind of understanding the world around us. So this may be a little bit of a change. Let's start with what you did like about his message last night.
Well, I thought it was a serious address from Trump. That, you know, and it's funny, I get so frustrated with the media commentary every night at this convention, because you would swear they're just like, well, every presidential candidate is supposed to be like Mitt Romney up there, you know, or then when Trump isn't giving the crazy one-liners and all that stuff, they're like, well, that's what people tune in and watch. And it's like, I don't think they understand. I thought Trump got up there, gave a very serious speech, and it was, you're right, I mean, the volume level was high the whole time. Mm-hmm. I joked that his, you know, right arm was going to fall off. He was chopping so much wood up there. But look, I mean, he hit issue after issue after issue. And I was watching actually Iowa Public Television or NPR's coverage of it, and they were saying, well, it was so dark, you know, that, you know, this is what people do when they're, you know, they're scaring people and it's so dark, you know. And I'm like, read the headlines, folks. Have you not paid attention to the news of what's going on with this country? Terrorist attacks, our cops being shot at, all this stuff. It's not a rosy scenario in America. And I thought Trump's speech appealed to that. And not only that, his whole law and order approach, his pivot to that, I think is a very broad opening to 80% of Americans. Now, he's not going to satisfy the cultural conservatives who want to go to war on social issues. He's definitely not going to satisfy, you know, the liberals who want to apologize for everything in the world. But for the 80% of Americans who wake up and go to work every day and want someone who will champion and fight for them and keep them safe, I thought that speech last night did a great job.
I'm going to give you some – I'm going to pull some stuff because I went back and reread the transcript of the speech from last night, and one particular thing where he went off script, I want to get to a little bit later, but I'm going to give you a little bit from the script, and then I want you to break down how it not necessarily frames what Hillary Clinton has to do at the DNC, but it certainly sets a tone of, it gives her a hurdle to get over. And the first one I want to pull out is an attack on law enforcement is an attack on all Americans.
Is a great line, and that's how it's how most people, I think, in this country feel, that when you target and assassinate our police officers, that's not just an attack on that individual. That is an attack on every community, everyone in this country, because those guys go out and put their lives on the line every day to protect us. even if they don't know us, even if they don't believe in the same things we do. You know, it doesn't matter color, creed, anything. Those people lay it down every day. And I thought that was a very good line last night.
He also said on January 20th, 2017, the day I take the oath of office, Americans will finally wake up in a country where the laws of the United States are enforced.
This is a great line. This is the biggest problem, I think, with Obama and a lot of, you know, we have presidents who are supposed to enforce laws, you know, and you have Obama who is, you know, just clear. I mean, we don't enforce our gun laws. We don't enforce, you know, they're always clamoring for new stuff, but they won't enforce the stuff that's on the books, whether it's immigration or whether it's Second Amendment issues. And so, again, I think a very common sense approach that solves a lot of problems in America. By just enforcing the stuff that's already on the books.
Craig, they can't. They can't enforce the things that are on the books because those things are there to protect the people of this nation and this nation and not allow it to slip into a liberal globalist state. And that runs anathema to what they want to do. So they can't enforce the laws on the books. They need new ones.
No, I agree. I completely agree with that. But, I mean, I think this is why, you know, every so often, you know, after 8 years of a Democrat and a liberal in the White House, you need a Republican who can, you know, just focus and say, no, look, we don't need to hey, Congress, you don't need to do anything. We got this. It's covered. We're going to enforce it. We're actually going to put the money behind it. We're going to do it because you've passed laws in the past. You've changed the code of this country. We have every right to do that. And we need that now more than ever.
Trump also in his speech says, we're going to ask every department head in government to provide a list of wasteful spending projects that we can eliminate in my first 100 days. Does he believe that he's going to get that?
I would like to call that the Tom Coburn mission, by the way.
I think it's smart to ask for it, mm-hmm. And I think it's a great way to weed out. Look, if they can't provide it, there's waste everywhere. There is waste everywhere in every level of government. And if you have department heads who can't weed it out in the first 100 days or at least give me something, guess what? They're gone. And I think this is a way that his way of saying this is how I'll manage the bureaucracy. Again, this is common sense stuff that happens in the real world that never happens in government. And if Trump can bring that, it's a huge sea change.
Craig Robinson with us this morning on the morning meeting, and you were prolific last night on social media, but I want to back it up to a couple of days ago, I think. You sent out a message that said the political ground is shifting under our feet, and I don't think people, especially the media, are aware of it. Explain that.
Yeah, I think that this is hard for me to explain. This is something I actually will write about. It's just finding the right words to explain it.
Is that something we'll get in our mailbox?
Maybe, you never know. But look, I think there's a lot of people who think this is a, you know, Trump is a unique instance, flash in the pan, and it's not symbolic of other things that are going on. I think that mindset is wrong. I'm not like, Trump might be the extravagant example of this, but when you look back to, look at Romney's weakness on Benghazi. Look at the influence that Ron and Rand Paul have had in this party. And you look at, you know, many other things. I look at the 2014 races where they were not, especially in Iowa, social issues, especially gay marriage, was not on the forefront anymore. That is somewhat of a settled issue. It is. I mean, in the eyes of the Supreme Court, it is a settled issue. I think we are moving on to a much different type of Republican Party. And if you look at that autopsy that Reince Priebus did, which I think is a joke, but when you look at what they really wanted, Trump delivers a lot of it. Yes, he's a little bit, you know, the immigration stuff, he runs counter to, but everything else is there, especially on the social issues and all that stuff. They don't like his language. They don't like how he talks, but I think the Republican Party is opening up, being a little bit more inclusive, because it's not going to be focused on, you know, the gay marriage issue, to be quite honest. I mean, this was something that the party has really struggled with and dealt with, and has been in our politics for over a decade. I think we are moving beyond that. We saw that last night. Heck, we saw it in Ted Cruz's speech. He mentioned it, how the Constitution protects everyone, whether you're, you know, gay, lesbian, transgendered, or whatever. You still have rights. And I think that this is a good moment for the Republican Party to move beyond that issue, because it does. When you talk to young people, it's like a light switch. It just turns them off. They're not there, that we're going to focus on those issues. And I think if Trump's done anything, he's kind of brought the Republican Party into the modern society and said, look, stop talking amongst yourselves about gay marriage, and let's talk about bigger, broader things that matter.
Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Last night you had Thiel speak, and I thought that the way he wrapped up, saying that he was proud to be gay, proud to be a Republican, and proud to be an American, was kind of the first olive branch we saw extended last night. Then you had Ivanka speak. It was very much a plea toward not only women, I thought, but to millennials and to those who are undecided and maybe even more conservative Democrats, where she said, look, we don't identify necessarily with the party label of Republican or Democrat. We identify with a country that's hurting and needs a lot of things right now. And we just happen to have a millennial here in the studio, in intern Addie. You watched the speech last night. Was there something you took away from it that you didn't know before, or something that you think your generation took away from that night of speakers?
Yeah, that was going to be a question I was going to ask, is what were your thoughts about Trump's children talking? Do you think they were helpful in engaging a different audience that maybe you wouldn't get if you just heard from Trump and other, I guess you could say, adults in the political world?
Sure. I thought the kids were the best part of the convention. And I think it does kind of look, because I think that if you are a young person or a millennial, or heck, if you're under the age of 45, I think you see those kids and what the issues that they spoke on and the passion that they had on certain things. I think a lot of people can relate with them. And I think a lot of people are impressed with them in general. You know, and I look at it 4 years ago, Rick Santorum, talked about, relating to workers and all that stuff. I think Ivanka and her speech on women makes sense. And look, I'm talking to, you two guys are radio guys. You know, I've been a blogger for a long time. I'll be the first. I'll raise my hand. My wife makes a lot more money than I do. It's why I can do what I can do. And this whole notion that, equal pay for equal work, I've always been supportive of it. Now, I might not, and I think Republicans have to be careful in the terminology that they use when they compete. And it's like sometimes I feel like we are having conversations on Facebook and other social media things, and especially on talk radio, where, we want to stake out this conservative position. And so, we don't like the minimum wage increase or the minimum wage at all. And we don't like this whole, equal pay stuff, because it protects, it's doing things with government we don't like. But I think the whole concept, should a woman, if I'm doing the same job of a woman, should she get paid the same as I do? You're hell damn right she should. And I'm fortunate my wife does get paid the same as a man. She's a lot smarter than I am, better looking too. But I think that was an important moment. It, as important or even more important as Peter Thiel and the talking about the gay issues in America. Look, I am a conservative. I am a Christian. But you know what? I have plenty of friends who and family members who live an alternative lifestyle. We can't just tell those people, hey, we don't want your business. I think we're a bigger country than that. We can move beyond that. And I thought the whole Trump family opened a lot of doors the last 4 days.
Do I blame Reince Priebus for the choice of music at the end of Trump's speech? They went to the casual pickup song, All Right Now, and then into You Can't Always Get What You Want?
Okay. I loved it. It's true. You don't always get what you want, but you get what you need, right?
That He's not the hero we want. He's the hero we need. Right. That kind of hails from Gotham. Is he our Dark Knight?
Here's the deal. I actually think the Trump campaign picked the song. Because if you've ever gone to a Trump rally, the music is kind of weird. You know, you'll be listening to Phantom of the Opera one moment, and then the next thing you're, you know, you've got some Queen song, We Are the Champions. I mean, I thought the whole music the whole week reminded me of a Trump rally. It is, he has a very eclectic taste of music, but, you know, you can't always get what you want. Hey, that's compromise. That's politics.
Yeah, that's politics.
And we're foolish to think that compromise isn't a necessary thing in America.
Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Craig, we saw just a little bit of showmanship this week when he was set up to introduce his wife to speak and came out to some of the blue smoke. I want more of that. I want more sort of Hollywood touches. Not necessarily some huge Jerry Bruckheimer production, but give me a little bit of showmanship along the way. And along those lines, Quaid had a great idea. Instead of the awkward silence you seem to hear at the background in conventions, maybe it's time for a house band to kind of help with those transitions, you know, a live band there.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, it's funny, when Fred Thompson ran for president in 2008.
I remember that.
His launch was, I thought, very good. And I told his Iowa campaign manager, I said, look, I would constantly, like, he can deliver when he's on stage. I would have him in makeup and lights and all that stuff. The same is true for Trump. And the reason why is because I think when you go to see Donald Trump, you want to see the show. Mm-hmm. You want to be entertained. You want to see all that. I wish he came out. You know, I was hoping after Ted Cruz's speech, which was a debacle in my opinion, I was hoping the lights went out like in a WWE wrestling match, and you heard that Undertaker tone come out, and then all of a sudden the lights flicker, and Donald Trump's over there, you know, waving his finger or whatever. It would have been great. I mean, I think we can take more of that. We can take the showmanship.
You're right in the middle of a text exchange that Sean and I had last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, is he going to bring out the Republican belt and throw it over his shoulder?
I said, I would die. My body couldn't handle the pure, unbridled joy that would be released at that moment. And then I would that would it. It would just be the morning meeting with Quaid.
And that is the stuff, though, that people talk about. They want to see. They want to make it fun. I saw it for all the controversy. There was a new controversy every day in this convention, and the media, you know, obsessed. I mean, they're like ravaged dogs, like eating the dead carcass the next morning. And it's like, you don't understand, though. He is like, even in the controversy, it was good for Trump. I mean, it was all Trump all the time. And I don't think any of the controversy really hurts at the end of the day. And I think that this is what everyone was talking about. I was driving into my office yesterday. You know, and Dan Patrick, sorry, I've not listened to political talk radio all morning, but Dan Patrick's talking about the Republican National Convention. That's good. That's good. And by the way, Ted Cruz not being in love with Donald Trump, that's okay too, because I think there's a lot of people who just, they don't like the Republican Party when it gets too preachy. And I think this is, I'm curious to see what this race brings this fall. You know, and especially in states where, you know, Republicans aren't on the march all the time. And so we'll see if they'll be able to keep this broad tent up.
Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican. So much to do this week, and next week, the Democrat National Convention. It Ooh. Might even be more fun. Craig, thanks for the time. Get back to your mailers.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll wrap it up next on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
That's going to do it for us. We ran it late with C-Rob. More next week. Fun continues at the DNC. Quaid will have on new pantsuits. We'll see you then.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again Monday for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.